I'm Marty Derlin. I'm here in the studio with Rick Watts. He's KVNF's new general manager. Why don't you start with your childhood and tell us where you grew up?
I grew up actually right on the Nebraska-Colorado border. Graduated from high school in Imperial, Nebraska. My dad was in the fertilizer business, so we were involved in farming on and off. My family still has some farms. My dad wasn't really involved in the actual farming part of, but more in eastern Nebraska. But he was in the fertilizer business, and then about the time actually that I was off to college, he purchased a couple hundred acres on a new reservoir in Nebraska, and he's kind of been developing that, and I actually was quite involved in that process also for quite a few years.
Where did you go to college?
Well, I went to Kearney State College in Kearney, Nebraska. I went to broadcasting school there. I started in 1978, so I go way back to the, I guess there were probably more golden years, but certainly back in the days of vinyl and carts and open reel tapes and classes on how to actually use an editing block to cut audio tape, reel-to-reel tape. So I did that for 4 years, and then I was program manager at our college station in Kearney, and then I worked for a commercial station there, KRNY, which is no longer KRNY, and I can't tell you exactly what the call letters are now. But and then when I switched over to television, I was actually worked as a news photographer for the Nebraska Television Network for a couple of years during and after school.
And what drew you to media or to broadcasting in the first place?
You know, I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things. I think maybe you're born to do it. I'm not sure. I think my first dream was to be a TV repairman, and that never really went anywhere. But I never really thought about it. It was just kind of my destiny, I guess, to go on and go to broadcast school and be on the radio.
Were you drawn to news, or were you drawn to music, or I mean, was it anything about content, or was it kind of more about the tech and the life, or
it was
something?
Kind of the life, I think. I mean, I've always been deeply, deeply interested in music and all different genres of music, and I think it was partially that. I think the technology aspect of it appealed to me. Like I said, I was going to be a TV repairman, you know.
Yeah.
And I've always been drawn to news and interested in news, and that's the beauty of broadcasting school, because you kind of get exposed to all of the different areas of broadcasting, and you know, and the business end of it too, because it's just a reality that if you're going to broadcast, you have to have money to fund that endeavor as well.
Mm-hmm.
Production, you know, putting together a decent commercial or promo or underwriting spot or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
But our college station was a public station. In fact, I think it was my junior year that we picked up National Public Radio. So, and at that point, I wasn't even familiar with National Public Radio. That would have been in about 1979 or 80. But I had a professor who was a huge advocate of National Public Radio, and he worked very hard to actually make our college station an affiliate. So that was a big deal when it happened.
Okay, you graduate from broadcasting school, and how does your career wend its way?
Well, I kind of had a change of direction in broadcasting. I became interested in the news aspect of it. And so then at that point, I decided that maybe I wanted to be a correspondent. So I transferred from Kearney State College, which is actually now the University of Nebraska at Kearney, to the University in Lincoln, and I finished out my degree. Actually, I got a degree in political science there. So I did that, and from that point, it's about the time my dad started his venture. He had a convenience store, and he sold gas, and he had a marina down on the water, and a huge campground, and he was selling home lots and kind of developing those and building homes and doing things like that. So I became kind of involved in that. Eventually, we ended up in the upper Arkansas Valley. So I was over in Salida, and I drove by the radio station. I thought, you know, I'm just going to stop in
And which one is that?
That would be KVRH AM and FM and KBVC. KVRH AM is one of those great old heritage AM stations. And we still had the birthday and anniversary show and the buy, sell, and trade show and the funeral announcements and all that kind of stuff.
Is it family-owned?
It was family-owned when I started there. So we had that AM, and then the FM was kind of a hot AC format commercial thing, and then the other FM, KBVC, was a country station. When I was hired, it was primarily in sales, but shortly after I started, we kind of undertook to do this hour-long morning show called Community Forum that I hosted that, and it was everything from, having reputable politicians talking about issues. I had the great I think it was a thrill, and actually it was a thrill for me to spend quite a lot of time with the artists Christo and Jean-Claude on their Over the River project, and they used to stop in and see me typically when they were around. And everything from that to the great group of women who put together a little organization to fund micro-businesses in Nicaragua, or the lady who had an organization that bought Christmas presents for children whose parents were incarcerated. But it was a great thing, and it was well-received, and we did it for a long time.
How long?
Well, probably a year or so, and then Three Eagles Communications bought our stations. What happens oftentimes when large corporate entities buy radio stations, suddenly that became dismantled. And I think we picked up Rush and some things like that, you know, that kind of took up that AM morning time more so than our local programming. And I think they even let our announcer, who'd been there, our morning guy who'd been there 25 years, go, you know. So so it was kind of a sad thing to see that happen, and ended up pretty much exclusively in sales at that point.
How long were you employed there altogether then?
Boy, a year or two, probably. A year or two,
I think. Uh-huh. And is that your most recent radio experience?
No. About 3.5 years ago or 4 years ago, I have 6 sons and no daughters. And my wife had all brothers and no sisters. So my son Ian married a young lady from Bennett, Iowa. And so he moved to Bennett, Iowa, and they gave us a granddaughter. Oh, it was the first girl. I mean, it was really an exciting thing for us. And we ended up in Iowa and bought a couple of buildings there, and we put a restaurant in and did some things because at that point my kids kind of wanted to be involved in a family business, so we did that. And while we were doing that, I got hooked up with the radio stations in Muscatine. Again, it's a kind of a heritage AM station, KWPC, and that was the AM, and then we had an FM station there as well, and that was part of the Prairie Communications group of stations. They have, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 clusters of stations throughout eastern Iowa and western Illinois. So the kids were kind of running the bar and the restaurant for me, and as was the plan, and I went to work kind of as a consultant. At that point, those stations had been kind of allowed to deteriorate, or decay probably is a better word maybe. And I went down, and I'd actually, when I first got to town, I'd stopped in down there, and the new general manager down there had kind of dusted off some resumes and came across mine and kind of called me out of the blue. And I went down, and he and I kind of masterminded this resurrection of the stations there. We restored a lot of the original components that were at the AM station, those community-oriented programs. So, you know, both AM stations were really community broadcasting, although maybe a little more on a commercial level, obviously, but I mean, it had all of those same elements that you would look for in a community station.
Well, let's talk about public radio, community radio, and how do you see the differences between commercial and community radio?
Well, like I said, I started out, I guess, my very first gig with the college stations, it was a community station or a, you know, and I think first it's, you need to distinguish between community radio and public radio, because I think that there's a difference there. Public radio, to me anymore, is just kind of a different format, I think, of commercial radio, because you have maybe 2 or 3 announcers that are doing everything all day long, like you would in a commercial station, with NPR being your news. To me, I guess, public and commercial radio are a lot closer maybe than people realize they are. Now, when you get into a community station like this, it's a little bit different because, and I think it's more valuable because actually you're really considering the input of the community in determining what you're going to do on a programming basis, especially. And those people are absolutely invaluable to you because they're your volunteers. The beauty of this station, and again, I've only been here a couple weeks, but Marty, I'm just absolutely overrun with the passion that the people that are involved from the newest volunteer all the way through the president of the board of directors. I mean, everybody really asserts an ownership interest in this station, and it's great. You know, it's kind of like a big family, though. I mean, you've got the squabbles between the different viewpoints and the different tastes in music, and, you know, the news people versus the music people, and the news people talking about what kind of news, you know, I mean, what slant, you know, do we want to have the news? Community radio, to me, I guess it's kind of like the last frontier as far as, you know, radio going back to the old Pacifica days when you're talking about real public radio and community radio. And but, you know, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, depending upon how you want to look at it, the times are kind of changing here, too. You know, we're facing some issues, obviously, that I think that probably my experience on the commercial end of things is probably going to be somewhat helpful. You know, and I think everybody's aware of the fact that there are folks out there that don't believe that the government has any part or should have any part whatsoever in funding the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and that if you're going to have a license to broadcast, you should be economically viable enough through your listeners or members or underwriters that you ought to be able to fund yourself.
I've got to say that they have put that on the chopping block every year since I can remember. And each time the American public has basically risen up, written their congresspeople and said, do not take away my PBS or do not take away my NPR or my community station. But of course, it is on the chopping block.
And I don't know that the risk is even so much that they just say, we're not going to fund the Corporation for Public Broadcasting anymore. But I mean, they've got in the works now that we're going to continue to fund it. But if you're going to be eligible for funding through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, you have to show that you're viable by raising, you know, X number of dollars in order to qualify for the funding. So we are going to have to kind of be looking at some more, you know, private funding, I think, in order to remain viable. And I just want to make sure that we're ahead of the curve. I don't want to find out that the money's been chopped when we're in a position where we can't afford to have it chopped.
We're non-commercial. How can you bring your commercial experience to bear here to help us without turning us into a commercial station?
Well, we have, okay, and just in a commercial station, I'm just talking averages here. You know, at the last station I was at, we were running 3 minutes of commercials four times an hour. So that would be six commercials times four. That's 24 commercial spots. Here we run four underwriting messages an hour, but we still have untold amounts of inventory that we're not running. So, I mean, if we honestly had all four of those underwriting spots sponsored, it would put us in a position where we would meet our budget on underwriting and meet our goals. So certainly we don't want to make this sound like a commercial station by putting a lot of announcements on there that are going to clutter up or disrupt, you know, the flow of our music-centric programming here. But certainly I think that we could go out there and fill those four spots mm-hmm. that are available every hour and still have a, you know, I don't think that you would even notice. I don't think you would even notice.
Certainly NPR has used underwriting to a huge extent. We hear it in Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And we hear it at Colorado Public Radio, where every available underwriting second is exploited.
Right.
And where's that line, you know? Are we going to know it internally we've crossed it? Or are we going to hear it from listeners? Or
where's the line? Well, I mean, and it's a fine line, let me tell you what, because, I mean, there's a tipping point there, obviously. When you start putting on too much underwriting, you're going to start, you know, your listeners are going to become a little bit disenfranchised, then your membership money starts falling off. So it's a real balancing act. And I don't think that the one thing I know about here at KVNF is that we don't have to worry about people not letting us know what their opinion is. if we start getting to the point where the underwriting, the frequency of the underwriting messages is making things sound commercial here. I'm pretty sure people are going to let us know. And frankly, I'm very sensitive about that. The last thing I want is for this station to go through some kind of a metamorphosis where it's beginning to sound commercial, because then you lose, you know, you lose your identity. And this station, in my opinion, Marty, is probably one of the best community radio stations in the country. And that's why I'm so pleased to be here. And certainly it is not my mission to make this station sound any different than it does right now. And it's a very, very fine line that you walk when you start going out and seeking underwriting. And I think that you certainly can set limitations regarding the type of underwriting that you take. I want to target local businesses. I don't want to go after huge corporations with their own agendas that, you know, kind of bleed through to what you're doing, whether they say anything or not. I mean, you just, it's kind of the guilt by association thing. You know, certainly we don't want to offend our listeners and our members, because, you know, we derive a good portion of our funding from our members. I mean, it's great to be able to walk into a potential underwriter when you're trying to differentiate yourself from the commercial station up the road in Montrose or wherever, and saying, you know, our listeners appreciate us so much that 1,200 to 1,300 households give us money to be on the air. I mean, how many people give money to the local classic rock station just to be on the air, you know? So, I mean, we have a huge value to our listeners. Our mission is to our listeners, but we just have to make sure that we're able to continue this wonderful organization in the event that the public money isn't available anymore.
Do you have any other ideas for how to raise funding besides underwriting?
I do. And one of the main things and one of the biggest untapped resources that we have is, you know, we've got a transmitter, a big transmitter over in Montrose. We've got five translators serving other areas here that I think that we really need to strive to bring those communities, because we've made a huge investment in them, into the fold here, and to get them to start looking at us as their local radio station. And if we can do that, you know, certainly there's a world of members out there that are untapped. And I think that through utilizing our public affairs programming and our news programming, that we're kind of in the process now of volleying back and forth a little bit, exactly trying to find out how to do it. But by expanding that a little bit and including those other communities, I know that Allie's done a great job. I know the Lake City kids are involved in the Pass the Mic program now. And when you start getting parents and grandparents and people like that listening to your station, they begin to claim a little ownership too. And then suddenly you're getting membership money and contributions and things like that.
How about grants? Have you written grants before?
I have. The last real estate project I did in Iowa was a historical building. And we wrote a grant for some money to, you know, we wanted to kind of bring it back to its original architectural splendor. And so I wrote a grant for some money for improvements to the building itself, and then also for the exterior of the building for a facade. I've not written grants for, I guess, funding for the radio, but I have a great staff here, and I don't see that there's probably, essentially what you've got to do is be able to effectively communicate in writing the value of your cause. And I think that if you can effectively do that, that's 90% of the grant writing, so long as you understand where to do it. The other thing is that I think there's other avenues that we can approach in fundraising that maybe haven't been utilized here. I mean, I'd like everybody who's, you know, a member of this station and who values this station, you know, when you're trying to figure out your estate plan, what are you going to do with your estate when you're gone? I mean, are there causes out there that could benefit, you know, from a bequeath? And, you know, I think that that's something that we need to get out there. I mean, I think that there are all kinds of avenues that are available to us short of underwriting. And I don't want to devalue underwriting, but I certainly understand your point. It's kind of what, at least from a programming standpoint, separates us from the rest of the world.
Do you think there's a difference between the people who listen to commercial radio and the people who listen to public radio or community radio?
Absolutely. People who listen to commercial radio, and I'm certainly not devaluing them or whatever, but it just seems to me like they're not really franchised. And I don't know if that's a good word or not. They don't really feel like it's an asset to them. It's just something that's out there. I mean, you can flip your radio on and listen for your favorite artist on your favorite format station. And anymore, most stations, it seems like they're Cumulus or Clear Channel or Cox. I think when you get into community radio or public radio, I mean, you really are there actively seeking out something that you're not able to get through commercial radio, be that a news program that maybe is more tailored towards your philosophical views, or maybe you're just somebody who wants to hear every different viewpoint on something. And I think that we have that here. I mean, we have everything from Democracy Now! To National Public Radio, which in my opinion is a little more middle of the road, maybe even more so than it used to be. But like I said, we've got very diverse programming here, and that's what I love about it. And I like to listen to all of it because I think it makes me a more well-rounded person by, you know, being more in tune with other people's viewpoints.
What do you think makes KVNF unique?
Well, we're in a unique place, and I think that unique people have sought out this unique place. I like to think that maybe I'm one of those unique people that have found their way here too, but like I said, what just bowls me over is the interest in this radio station. And I mean, people take it personally. I mean, like I said, in commercial radio, I've never had anybody, you know, email me, you know, about a little minor programming change, because I don't think people in those types of markets or stations or whatever, I don't think they even pay attention to it. But I mean, the most minute change here can just end up in this tidal wave of debate and dialogue, and I think it's just fantastic. And the fact that we have 80 some volunteer disc jockeys, I mean, holy cow, that's just amazing to me. And they're all willing to take the time to invest, to go through the training. And I come in here and there they are out there on the shelves, I mean, spending an hour or 2 hours pulling their music for their show. I mean, they're not just going on and flipping on some automated program that's going to play the music in the order that the program director put it into the system. You know, I mean, it is so diverse here. The musical taste is so diverse here that, I mean, you can turn it on at any given hour and you don't know for sure what you might be hearing, because, you know, we're not locked into a format. And that's just, it's like the Valley here. It doesn't have a format. I mean, it's everywhere from left to right, up to down to whatever, but it's just a unique place, and this is a unique station, and I just can't tell you how happy I am to be a part of it.
This building was one of probably the crowning achievement of our previous manager, Sally
right.
Kane. What vision would you have now? Where's the next stage for KVNF? You've talked about leaving it the way it is, but
right.
What would make it better? What do you see? What's your vision?
First, let me say this. When I walked into this building for the first time, I was just absolutely amazed. It's just absolutely incredible. So obviously one of our goals has to be just to maintain what we've got, because again, you know, it's so much work went into putting this place together that, you know, we have to stay on top of it. You know, I've got a lot of experience building, so, you know, we're going to stay on top of it, and we're going to keep this facility, hopefully, you know, in the wonderful, beautiful, state-of-the-art condition that it's in. But, you know, technology does change, and we have to kind of stay on top of that, and we're going to have to probably replace some equipment, even though it's functional, just to keep everything, you know, up to date. Back to your question, I would really, I guess, love to see these outlying communities more engaged in what we're doing here. You know, when we put a translator in those communities, we kind of made a pact with the FCC that we're going to serve that area. I mean, that's something that's involved anytime that you're awarded a frequency in the spectrum. So we owe it to them, but, you know, it's a two-way street. So hopefully we'll be able to make them part of the family. I guess I just want to urge anybody that, I mean, if they have a concern or a question or some input, you know, I've got an open door policy. I mean, obviously, I've got things I've got to get done too, but that information is what's going to allow us to continue to be your community radio station. And it's that input that helps us make the decisions that are correct, you know, for our listeners and for our supporters and everyone else out there that has something to gain by the station being here.
Thanks very much. I've been speaking to Rick Watts. He's the new manager of KVNF. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Marty.